to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Welcome to the second of a three-part program featuring the life and times of baby boomer Grant Young. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm your host for this program. This show picks up on a discussion started in part one regarding Grant's thoughts on the Vietnam War and conscription, an issue at the time that seriously divided the country. It was also logical and appropriate that this discussion would then move neatly into one regarding Gough Whitlam and his historic win. Politics would appear to be of an interest for Grant, and one he has some strong and informed opinions on as he discusses the state of politics in Australia today. But it's not all politics, as Grant talks openly and honestly about his two marriages and eventual divorce in the first and separation in the second. Grant shares stories of the extensive travelling done by Deb, his second wife, and himself as they travelled through Asia and later Europe. It's during his talk about his time in India where Grant's humour really breaks through, and it's hard to believe that you, the listener, won't join us in laughing along. We pick up now with the continuation by Grant on his thoughts of the Vietnam War.
I knew one fella who was over there, and I think he was with artillery or something, but anyway, he got drowned with Agent Orange.
Oh.
And he didn't come out too badly himself, but he had, I'm pretty sure it was four kids. The first child he had was before he went, and the child was perfectly well. The other children all had hair lips and difficulties around that area. So, as he said, Agent Orange, he said, and with that sort of sequence, you can't deny it. So there was a lot of what was hidden. Yeah, I never quite worked out the bit with RSL and everything. I would have thought a returned soldier was a returned soldier. They had to follow orders, and they probably weren't orders they always wanted to follow, and perhaps some they shouldn't have followed, like any war, and that's not putting them down at all.
No.
But these men really needed the advice.
They needed support, proper support.
Of, people who've been there before them.
Yes, and it's a little bit reflected, like with the young men that are coming back or have come back now from Afghanistan and the other places, suffering similar, not so much chemical issues, but just suffering from stress and being abandoned.
Yeah.
It's a very strange thing, isn't it? The countries send their young men to war and then abandon them when they come back. I don't understand it.
Well, I remember the 6 o'clock closing. You'd see, you'd walk past the pub because I was too young to go in, and you couldn't see the bar. It'd be just chock-a-block full of people, and you could see pots being passed overhead, because I was trying to get the last one in before they left. Now, I know a number of men who were regulars, and they were World War II veterans. And that was their way of sort of staying sane.
Dealing with their demons, yes.
And they got into alcohol, some very, very badly. I know of a couple that I think died through the whole thing. So you would think, with all that going on, that there'd be some people with enough brains to say, hang on, we've got to get hold of these people as soon as they come back, and we may have to do things with them over there, not just bring them back and then say, what'll we do, and leave it up to themselves.
Going back to you and your experiences, by the time you're in the 70s, you are now in your 20s, early 20s. What were you doing for work? Because you mentioned that you worked for quite a while in the grocery area. Did you move on to something else by then?
I got married.
Okay, what was the name of your wife?
Julie.
How did you meet her?
Yeah, with friends.
With friends?
Friends. I had to think then, with friends that I knew. And we were married for 28 years and then divorced. And had two daughters,
Oh, nice.
Which both done tremendously well in life, despite my best efforts at bringing them up. they've done well and got good partners.
Yeah.
two grandchildren. So, yeah, so the 70s was what I think set me off to what I'd call real adulthood. And like many people in the 70s, I worked at Ford Motor Company.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure, 18, 19 years.
Oh, that's a long stint.
Yeah. Probably I was more too lazy to leave. I don't know. But Fords didn't pay too badly compared to some, and it was very secure work. So it was worth it when you're bringing up a family. That's what you look for.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
And then I bought a house, Office of Housing property privately off people, which meant I paid nowhere near the amount I would have paid, and paid very little on payments to Office of Housing. So it worked out quite.
So you're still in Geelong?
Still in Geelong. I've moved out to Corio, which was one of the Office of Housing areas. It was where we were, it was a pretty good area. Nor Lane was a difficult area in Office of Housing if you were living there. There was a lot of problems there. But, yeah, I was there and I just continued on with Julie and the kids and playing sport and until I could play sport no longer. And I started to creak a bit. the 70s, I thought was a tremendous area. We saw the first Labor government since 1949.
That so was a big 23 wasn't
years
it?
Was a yeah. huge moment. I don't think people could quite believe what they'd done, in the sense that they'd obviously voted them in, and how do we get here? And they were, I think you've got to say, a government with training wheels, but I don't think they got anywhere near the decent go that any government needs to succeed. But yes. There were some great characters in there. You look at Jim Cairns, and if you think of Jim Cairns, you think of Judy Morrissey. And
that's right. And on it goes. Yes.
It just goes on and on.
Yes, it was. I think your comment there about training wheels is a really astute one, because, as you pointed out, it had been so long since Labor had been in government. It must have been very difficult for them, and I suggest the bureaucracy wasn't all that happy.
They didn't have the support of the bureaucracy. And most politicians, I assume, are reasonably intelligent, but they're not brilliant. So you need all that support of the bureaucracy so you can make your decisions and get the advice that you want.
Mind you, couldn't we deal with use a Whitlam today, though?
Well, we could use anyone that has character that you'd like to point out to your kids.
And a vision.
I think that's the big thing that's missing. We have a Prime Minister I don't think most people trust. That's not a good thing. His vision seems to be, if you belt Labor over the head often enough, the people believe it and you'll get back in. I mean, he's entitled to be as he is and to do as he wishes, but that's not leadership. Whitlam, probably his ego brought him down a bit at times, but at least you knew you had a leader, whether you liked the direction you were going or you didn't like the direction you were going. And then out of that era, of course, came the Paul Keatings and
the Bob Hawkes.
Bob Hawkes, yeah. It was a very interesting time. I can still remember the morning that the Whitlam government was sacked. I went down to catch a bus to work. This was about 7 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden, five or six army trucks with soldiers in the back went past. And I wondered what on earth. I'd never seen them in that part. And by the time I got to work, I was told they'd been sacked. I don't know whether the two joined up together, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yes.
I think, thank goodness, it was Whitlam, because he had the calmness of mind not to really put the country in a terrible position.
Yes.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
I'm Rob Grews, and I'm talking with Grant Young, and Grant is recalling his life and times during the 1970s. Picking up your life again then, Did you, Julie was your wife at that stage? Did you and Julie ever get to do any travelling together? Did you?
No, I didn't. I married a second time to Debs, and unfortunately we just separated, which came as a surprise to me. But it was great, and so was she. She's, I think, an extraordinary person. Yeah, we managed to get to a number of trips to Southeast Asia. We had a couple of trips to India, Bangladesh, Vietnam, Malaysia, Singapore.
Yeah, so pretty well travelled through Asia then.
Which was good.
Yeah.
And then we went on a trip to... I had a stroke a few years ago, and we were going on a trip to Europe, and we decided we'd need to cut down the size of it a little bit. I coped with what was there fairly well, but we didn't know whether I would or not. So that was good fun, because my father came from Scotland, and she had family also there.
And this is Deb?
Deb, yeah, Debs. And so away she went. She did all the negotiating with airports and that sort of stuff.
Oh, good.
Well, I stood there dumbly behind, you know, ready in support. I used to carry the bags, and we always used to say, you know, because I was 20 years older than her, that it had to be a partnership. It couldn't be anything else.
Yeah.
It had to be a partnership. So the partnership was her grabbing passports and everything else, and me
doing the lugging
baggage. And, but yeah, so we went over to Europe. We went to Belgium was the first place we went to Brussels, and that loved it, loved the people, just terrific. And then we went to France for a bit, and then caught the train under the Channel. I couldn't quite believe I was in a tunnel under the English Channel in a train. It was almost sci-fi to me, to be honest. And we went to London and had a look around London, and then we drove north, because my father came from the Inverness area in Scotland, so we went right up to Scotland. Took some, about 10 days or so. Liked it more. Beautiful country, one of the most beautiful countries in the world, I think, Scotland. And I found the cottage that my father was born in.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it's still there.
Goodness.
His father was a crofter. Dad was one of 11, of which there was 8 females plus grandma. So
wow.
I don't know how they worked all that out. And, it was. It was marvellous. And I even discovered that even though my surname's Young, it may well not be, because there was some doubts about who my grandfather's father was. And we sort of spoke to someone, the local council up there, who could tell us, and she said, "Oh, yeah, you could be this or you could be that, you know." I said, "Is this common?" And she said, "Oh, yeah." She said, "It's quite common." I said, "What's it? Too many haystacks?" What's? She gave you the foulest of looks, and I looked, "Oh, shut up."
Whoops, yeah, I went a step too far that time.
It just had me beat.
Yeah.
And it was explained how it would be that way, and that it was considered quite normal. It would appear that somewhere along the line, my grandfather took the name Young out of from a male in the next village that must have had knowledge of the family and so on. So he got rid of whatever name he had.
That's really unusual.
And, so, yeah.
But not unusual there.
Not unusual there. I just laugh every time I think about it. Who am I?
Yeah, who am you? Yeah, this is true. As we've said, you've travelled extensively through Asia and done some pretty nice travelling through Europe. Do you have a favourite country or a favourite place that you found?
I loved India.
What was it about India?
India's hard going for a white person, if you like, someone who lives in our climate, and is, because it's, when we were there, very hot, very, very crowded, but it's alive. It's very, very alive. And places like Taj Mahal, it blew my mind anyway. I can remember sitting in the garden area in the front, and the only thing I can describe it as was this huge spiritual feeling, not right. a specific, not Christian, not
no.
yeah, there.
Not religious, spiritual. There's spiritual, a big
yeah, yes. there's a big difference between yes. the two. And I love that. And then we were down in Goa and we went to what they call the Church of Bom Jesus, which is Church of the Child Jesus. And they have the body of Francis Xavier in a, what would you call it, a glass case. He's been dead for nearly 400 years.
Wow.
And the body's still there. And it is a definite body. I sort of stood there looking at it. They bring it down every so often and venerate it. So, and things that the right, that's what I loved about the things that the white mind, if you like, or our culture, can't grasp.
Yes.
It just, you can only go, oh yeah, okay. But they believe it's true and it appears to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really enjoyed that. I liked the Indian people. Before we went over, I read How Do I Behave sort of thing mm-hmm. In India, because mm-hmm. the last thing you want to do is offend mm-hmm. people.
Of course.
And the thing I found the most difficult was you were not to look a woman in the eye.
Oh, I at any stage aware of that.
Because okay. It denigrates her.
Oh, okay.
You could see her as a prostitute or mm-hmm. whatever. So I spent a lot of time talking to female left shoulders as I was going through. And I just found them friendly. They know how to do business, particularly the Sikhs. I think they're just born to do business. And you go past these little stalls in the main street of places like Delhi and Mumbai, and I'm not talking about Sikhs here, and they'll be selling their wares there, or they'll have a generator which they've made themselves, so they pedal that and they can carve on what they want. And and they are a little bit eccentric as well compared to ourselves. And could I live in India? If I was down the southern end, down around Goa, I could probably cope with the heat and that. I might need a air conditioner in the house. But the thing is there that no one has a refrigerator that I could find. Everybody buys fresh from the markets.
Oh, okay.
And
you
could hardly find a supermarket. Now it's a huge commercial country. Why couldn't you find a supermarket? Because what were you going to buy? You get your packaged stuff and that, but you couldn't buy ice cream.
No.
There was nowhere to freeze it when you got it. But no, it was great.
So you, not only did you enjoy India, you've just said, push come to shove, you could live in southern India quite comfortably. That suggests then that you had no issues eating all the local food, because a lot of Europeans don't tend to want to eat whatever Asian country they're in their food. Let's stick to what we know.
I'm afraid I ate Chinese food all around India.
You ate Chinese food all around India.
I couldn't stand the burning tongue from everything.
Funny, Brad.
So I'd go into it. And they can cook over there, by gee, they can cook. I'd go in and I'd say, can I have da-da-da-da-da, you know? And the waiter would sort of look at you strangely, and we were in one place, and he went over and to the cook, and he said, such and such, yeah. And no chilli. You could see this guy.
That just didn't make any sense.
He looked like someone had belled him between the eyes of a baseball. No chilli, and the waiter's going, no chilli. And he looked over at us like, oh, bloody mad white people. Because all that makes them perspire.
Yes.
And so it's cooler for
That's
them.
Right.
But no, I couldn't take it at all. So
right.
I reckon I should have probably got on the Guinness Book of Records people to see if anybody had toured India.
I think that is a wonderful story. That is so wonderful.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, featuring the life and times of older Australians.
Vietnam, been to too. That was interesting. Saigon's as corrupt and obviously corrupt as any city I've ever been into. But Hanoi, even though it is strongly communist, but it's also strongly Buddhist. So you've got a lovely mix in there. Wake up every morning and you have these men on bicycles with loudspeakers giving the thought for the day, I think it was, to wake everybody up.
Very interesting. It takes us back to an early discussion with the Vietnam War, and this image that was projected about how the communist Vietnamese communists would just hoard down and take over Australia. Not only did they take over Vietnam, history has shown that it's actually become a very politically stable country and doing quite well for itself.
Very politically stable. It's very modern in many ways. I mean, you still see far more bicycles than you'll see...
But that's a year, isn't it?
But why not?
Yes.
We've got heaps of cars and look at what we've got to deal with.
Mm.
Yes, and the other thing that I was really impressed with over there, people would ask me where I come from, and I'd say I was Australian. And, oh, good, yeah, welcome. And I mean, when you consider that they knew full well that we'd been there with
of
our
course.
Army.
And
it was sort of like a, I don't know whether it was a forgiveness thing or an acceptance, well, you're here, so, yeah, that's okay.
In some ways, better they deal with it better than some Australians do.
Oh, I think so. Australians, I don't know what it is, we seem to want to hold on to grudges and things of the past. And we see that quite a bit. Sometimes we don't even recognise that's what it is because we're so used to it, but we do, and quite badly. It's almost like the old English attitude.
Indeed. So why did you end up stop travelling? Was it financial or health or...?
Why did we? Look, I think there was a lot of things. My... general fitness and brain powers diminished a little bit as time's gone on from the stroke. Probably could have gone and done one, but Debs and I ran into some marital problems, and I wouldn't be able to go on my own.
Right.
I'd probably find myself in a bit of strife or doing a lot of smiling at people over there, which is sad, really, because we had great times.
And yes.
Really did have great times. And it was funny because she's only about 5'4". And in India, if she got ahead of me, sometimes I'd lose her in the crowd. She'd turn around. But we're both sort of people, persons. I enjoy talking to people. People can also drive me crazy, as we all find, you know. Yeah, if I could have gone over again, I've seen enough of Southeast Asia. It is hard work, and it's terrific. It's worth everything you put in. But I'd probably want to go back to Europe, have a look at Germany in particular, have a look at what pertains to old Nazi Germany, and go up to Hungary and have a look at music and stuff. But I think I've done my time.
You've done your time. Mm. Did you retire before the traditional retirement age because of your health, or did you get through to retirement age?
No, I got through to retirement age. I retired at 65, and so I've been retired 7 years.
Which is not that long ago.
No, it's not that long ago. And we bought a house up in St Arnett, and we thought we might, when I retired, go and live up there for a bit. Debs is a nurse. So getting work nursing around those areas is not difficult.
No.
And then we decided we wouldn't. She wanted to do emergency nursing, which meant a lot of study and stuff like that. So I sort of ran the house. She had three boys and two eventually. And so I'd organise them and study, and she went off to work and that sort of thing. And so we decided we'd sell the house there, and I went up and painted all the inside and fixed it up a bit, and got the odd tradie in to do it and sold it. And she decided, I knew for quite a while she'd love to live by the sea. She lived in Coffs Harbour for a while and that, and so, and the sea up around that way is just marvellous to look at, let alone be in. And so eventually we moved into here. But unfortunately, I still don't know her actual reasons other than she told me she wasn't happy. And out of respect and love for her, I just had to accept that.
that not, really does indicate a still a deep. You said the way you put that, you still have deep feelings for her.
Oh yeah, yeah. I do look at it when the realization of what had happened came in. I was a mess for over a year.
Of course, of course.
And even now, it's a little bit that way. But you know, I've always reckoned. Well, with a marriage, if one person doesn't want to be in it, there is no marriage. It doesn't matter what you want. You can't marry yourself. Or at least last I heard, you couldn't. Well, you almost marry anyone else nowadays, which is interesting.
Do join Grant and myself for the third and final part of his story next week, which shows that Grant has great insight into himself and... He also goes on to discuss the ramifications of the COVID lockdown. That's next week. Grant Young on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.